Today, a woman went mad in the supermarket was the title of the first short story published by Hilma Wolitzer. Wolitzer, at 35, was raising her two daughters and taking care of her suburban Long Island home when that story appeared in the Saturday Evening Post. She's written five novels since then, sticking with the themes of marriage and family life. Her new novel, Silver, is a sequel to her 1977 novel, In the Flesh. The main characters are Pauli Flax and her husband, Howard. The story opens on the eve of their silver anniversary, as their life together is about to change.
One night in August, understanding all at once why I'd been so sad, I decided to leave Howard. This was the real thing, not just the fireworks of battle or some transient post-battle blues. We hadn't even had a decent argument for months, and I wasn't giving Howard up the way he kept giving up cigarettes. I mean that I meant it. But do we ever know what we mean? Light years before, when I still believed we had made it for life like wolves, Howard left and went to live with another woman. After a while, he came back, and the children and I made room for him in the kitchen and the bedroom, ready to forgive, if not forget. I wish I could say that I had fallen in love this time, that I was rushing from the house with my skin on fire, and that Mr. Wonderful was going to roll me across the lawn and put out the flames. It wasn't like that, though. Howard and I were getting ready for bed, as we'd done for most of more than 24 years, moving through our old ballet of dropped shoes and emptied underwear. I realized that we didn't look frankly at one another's nakedness anymore. Waning interest made us glance away, and shyness of how we were changing. I guess Howard saw me the way I saw him, in hasty flashes of softened flesh before the lights went out.
Now, you wrote about these two characters in a 1977 novel called In the Flesh. Why did you bring them back for a new novel?
I didn't really bring them back. They just never left. They just kept living inside my head, and I always wondered what happened to them. And the way to find out was to write about them.
Now, shortly after the woman main character, Pauli, decides to leave her husband, he has a heart attack, and she
very inconvenient.
Yes. Well, she goes to see him in the hospital, and the next day she says, "Last night, I'd left the hospital with fear and with the weight of love and love's history." And I think, in a way, that's the real subject of your book, The Weight of Love and the Weight of Love's History.
I think it is, too. I think that when people are connected and share a history, they, even when they separate, they can't quite separate. There's always something going on between them. History becomes a palpable thing. And they were deeply in love, as they keep telling you in alternating voices. They were very much in love.
In your new novel, the point of view alternates between the husband and the wife.
Yeah, that's new for me. That in the Flesh, in the original novel, it was all told through Pauli's point of view, and I finally decided that wasn't giving Howard his fair shake.
Yeah, now that really interests me, because I think that many women novelists really side with their woman protagonist and really see things from her point of view, especially in relationships.
And well, of course, and I'm very sympathetic with Pauli. There's no question about it. But I also see Howard as a real sympathetic whole person, too. And I felt if he didn't tell his side of the story, then it wasn't fair. I think that in the end, my greatest sympathy is with her. She is the wronged party in this marriage, so to speak. But I like him, too. And I grew to like him more as I began to let the story be told in partly in his voice. I sort of understood his motives for what he did.
I guess that's a good exercise in trying to understand your character, to tell the story from their point of view.
Yeah, and it's a lot of fun, too, to have your character not sound like a woman when it's meant to be a man. It was a big challenge.
Well, what did you have to do differently in terms of tone and...
Well, I always read my work aloud while I'm writing it, and if it begins to sound too much like me, I stop.
Now, you didn't start publishing until you were 35 years old. That was in 1965. Right. You published a short story?
My first short story in the old Saturday Evening Post, and I am really a late bloomer. And my first novel was published when I was 44.
And until then, you were a mother?
Say it, a housewife.
I hate that word.
I do, too.
And I don't... I mean, I hate homemaker also. There's something so...
domestic. That's even worse.
It reminds me of those junior high school classes in homemaking that, that the girls had to take.
And I failed at that anyway. when Ending first came out, when the first book was published, I got a great deal of press in the local papers on Long Island. And the headlines read things like, housewife turns into writer. And I had this vision of a woman going into a telephone booth, tearing off her apron, and coming out with a big W on her chest. And it wasn't like that. It was very gradual. First of all, I had no role model, and I didn't know any writers in those days, and I just started writing and was lucky enough to have things published. And it just kept going, and finally I found myself just so involved in it that I stopped making Jell-O.
Well, how did you start writing? What made you decide to pick up the pen?
I sat down one day and just wrote a short story, and I was really lucky. Through a series of coincidences, I was able to contact an agent, and the agent took me on, and she had faith in the story, and it was eventually sold, and I bought my first car with the sale of that story. So
wow.
My life changed in material ways immediately. And I had written that story in about 2 hours, and I got enough money to pay for half the car at least. And I thought, wow, I'm going to write a story a week or a story a month. And you know, I saw myself with a fleet of Ramblers, but it didn't work out that way. I didn't sell another story for 3 years. And then it was to a small, prestigious literary magazine called New American Review. And I got $125 for it. And I was just as thrilled. So I knew I wasn't just in it for the money.
Were you worried when you started writing that you wouldn't have great themes because you had spent your adult life living in the suburbs?
Well, I've had to overcome that. I still worry about that, but I still claim that everything that happens in the bedroom and the kitchen matters more than what happens in the boardroom and the White House.
Did the women's movement give you courage to make that change?
Without any question. The feminine mystique was a very strong influence in my life. It gave me permission, not just courage. It really gave me permission to think of myself as a writer rather than as just a housewife.
Was there any resistance from your husband?
Some, definitely. I think he'd admit that. And gradually that went away, too. Mm-hmm. In fact, he has become the chief cook and bottle washer.
It is interesting to me, though, that you were able to basically start a new life while keeping the life that you had. A lot of people, when they make a really big change in their life, like becoming a writer, aren't able to contain that change within their current life, and they end up with some kind of divorce or a big move, something like that.
Well, it was really hard. It was a lot of work. It was a balancing act, really. I was given a Guggenheim fellowship in 1976 when I was writing In the Flesh, and one of the things I did with the money was hire a housekeeper part-time who took some of those duties away. And it was hard to relinquish them. When you do something all the time, like cooking and cleaning, you're proud of it. It's your job, and you want to do it well. I no longer want to do that part of the job. I just prefer writing.
Now, your daughter Meg started publishing when she was 22, I think, her first novel.
Well, she published a short story when she was 11.
Oh gosh. Did you react to that with both pride and a little bit of jealousy because she started so young?
You can't be jealous of your children. You just can't be. It was sheer pride. I think I wish I too could have had an early start so that I could, you know, make lots of mistakes and look forward to a long future of writing. But these things happen when they happen.
Do you and your daughter talk much about writing, or do you read each other's manuscripts?
We do all that, and we gossip a great deal, and it's fun. It's really nice.
The opening inscription for your new novel, Silver, is a quote from jazz singer Helen Humes, who sang with the Count Basie Band for a while. I think that's probably what she's most famous for.
It's a great quote, isn't it?
Yeah, why don't you read it and tell us where she said it and why you used it?
Trying to remember where I saw it. It was in a book about jazz by Whitney Balliot. Mm-hmm. I don't remember the name of the book, and this is a Helen Humes quote. I've had a very happy life, and I wouldn't do it otherwise. I even got married once and survived.
What appealed to you about that?
Oh, the irony of it, the wit, and the courage of it.
Okay. Hilma Wolitzer, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you, Terry.
Hilma Wolitzer's new novel, Silver, is published by Farrar, Straus & Giroux. This is Fresh Air.